Damayam didati svapadanti kam Pandeham shigra shiyutaparakamalam Shigram vaishnavam scha Shirupam sagradatam sahagana raganatam vidantam sajivam Sadvaitam savadutam pradana saitam Krishna chaitanya devam Shri Radha Krishna padam Sahagana lalita shivasakansvitam scha Hey Krishna karna sindo dinabando jagatkate Gopesha gopika kanta radha kanta namostute Tapta kanchina gorangi radhe brindavaneshri Prishyavanu sudha devi pranamami hari priye Vanchakapa trubhyascha kripa sindubhya vichha Padidhanavamanibhyo vaishnavibhyo namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Pranitananda Shedvedigadadhar Shivasari Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
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 Today we'll go over chapter 3 From the Nectar Devotion, chapter 3 is called Eligibility of the Candidate for Devotional Service. In the introduction, it has been explained about where the pure devotional service has been defined. And in chapter 1, it describes the 6 characteristics of pure devotional service. Chapter 2 describes its practice. And here in chapter 3, it will describe the basic qualifications for practicing devotional service. As we've heard, that devotional service is causeless. And because it's causeless, there are no prerequisites for taking up the practice of sadhana bhakti. In the beginning, we don't even need knowledge and detachment. The only requirement to take up pure devotional service is attraction for Krishna. That even if one is attached to material life, if one has unflinching attraction for Krishna, then one can still take up devotional service. Are you translating? Is that what's happening? Are you? No, I was just wondering. I can't even hear it. That's why I'm wondering if you translate. You can hear it? So how does one get this attraction for service to Krishna? It's only by the mercy of a pure devotee or pure devotees. That renunciation is not even a requirement or a prerequisite for devotional service. As a matter of fact, renunciation generally is an impediment because the very idea of renunciation, renouncing everything, including all objects of the senses, is not very beneficial for devotional service because emotions and senses are necessary or needed to be engaged in Krishna service. Therefore, simply negating the emotions and the senses can actually be detrimental for the practice of pure devotional devotional service. Now in this chapter, Prabhupada first of all defines 3 grades of devotees. This is Prabhupada's introduction to the 3 classes of devotees known as Uttama, Madhyama, and Kanista Adhikaris. The Uttama Adhikaris certainly is not a candidate for pure devotional service because he's already engaged in pure devotional service. That's because he's engaged in devotional service because he has full knowledge and faith in the goal. As Krishna says, Yesham antakatam papam jananam punyakarmanam te dvandva moham nirmuktva vajante mam drida vrataha. That without being free from previous sinful activities and without being engaged in pious activities, that no one can achieve the firm devotion necessary, the firm faith necessary to engage in pure devotional service. Yesham antakatam papam jananam punyakarmanam te dvandva moham nirmuktva vajante mam drida vrataha. So, to worship Krishna with firm faith, one has to become free from all sinful reactions, be engaged simply in devotional activities, pious activities, be free from all delusions of duality, understanding oneself to be Krishna's servant. Then one can engage oneself with determination in Krishna's service. The Uttamadhikari, he has that strong faith and this strong knowledge. He understands that the actual goal in life is to become Krishna conscious, and that Krishna is the only object of worship, and he wants to attain the transcendent loving service of Krishna. So the first class of devotee is one who strictly followed all the rules and regulations of the scriptures under the directions of a bona fide spiritual master. Being fully trained to preach and to become a spiritual master, he's considered first class. Prabhupada writes that the first class of devotee never deviates from the principle of higher authority. And in other words, one who has attained this mature determination, this dhrita vrata, should be accepted as a first class devotee. So an Madhyamadhikari, he has strong faith, but he's sometimes lacking in scriptural knowledge. That doesn't mean he doesn't know, he can't quote verses. Just that sometimes he may not be able to figure out decisively the conclusions of the Shastra. The finer points, that is. Although he knows conclusively that the goal of life is to become Krishna conscious, but some of the finer points he may not be able to perceive in the philosophy. And Prabhupada said he's not very expert in arguing on the strength of revealed scripture, but he has firm faith in the objective. He may know the Shastra, he may be quite well versed in it, but he may not have all the arguments. And the Kanista Adhikari, he has weak faith, doesn't have much scriptural knowledge, and therefore it can be easily swayed by superior arguments. So those, Prabhupada writes, those who are distressed, Chatura Vida Bhajante Imam, Jana Sukhatina Arjuna, Artha Jignasi Artharati, Jnani Cha Bharatarshiva. The four kinds of neophyte devotees generally approach Krishna for service. One of them is the distressed, one of them is those who are in need of money, one who is inquisitive and who is a wise person who is searching for knowledge of the Absolute. So these four kinds of persons come to Krishna and render service. Out of these, the wise person, he's actually eligible for pure devotional service. So there's a distinction between devotional service rendered by the other three classes, the neophytes, and pure devotional service, the wise person. So the wise person is still a Kanista Adhikari. Probably give some examples of, for instance, the distressed person was Gajendra. He was, a crocodile was biting on his foot, and he decided to surrender. Yes, if a crocodile was biting on our foot, we'd probably want to surrender too. But luckily he surrendered to Krishna. See, he's an example of a person who's distressed and wants relief quick. Couldn't call for an ambulance, so he called for Krishna. And as far as a person wanting some wealth, Dhruva Maharaj was such an example. He had a big desire. He wanted to get a kingdom greater than that of Lord Brahma. So if you want ask for some material benediction, you should ask for at least the kingdom as big as Brahma's or bigger. then if you want to ask something from Krishna, you might as well ask that. He wanted a kingdom bigger than practically the whole universe. It's not a small-time desire. And as far as inquisitiveness, that was the sages of Naimasharanya were inquisitive. They approached Shukadeva Suta Goswami in order to understand the science of God. And the wise persons are persons like the four Kumaras. Basically, they were free from the bodily concept of life, and therefore, being free from the bodily concept of life, they were the most eligible for pure devotional service. And the four Kumaras went to Vaikuntha. Not ordinary persons can approach the gates of Vaikuntha. There, when they saw Lord Narayan, simply by smelling the tulsi leaves and the sandalwood paste that were on his lotus feet, they changed from impersonalists to devotees, to pure devotees. Krishna says, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma na shoshiti na kankshati samak sarveshu bhuteshu mad bhaktin lavate param. That those who are free from hankering and lamentation and can see all living entities on the same level of spiritual understanding, that everyone is a spiritual soul, and that within everyone's heart is Krishna, that such a person is eligible to begin the process of pure devotional service. Such persons as the Kumaras, they were wise persons, and therefore they were able to actually begin the process of pure devotional service. Pure devotional service, we can understand, starts from the Madhyama platform. As it's already been explained, the pure devotional service is free from material desire. It's not covered by material desire, and especially it's not covered by the desire for liberation. And for the rest of the chapter, Prabhupada especially, or Srila Rupa Goswami especially points out that the devotees are averse to liberation. Because if one takes the path of mukti or impersonal liberation, then there's no opportunity to actually understand Krishna. So there are three types of happiness. There is happiness, material happiness. There is spiritual happiness of liberation. And there is the devotional happiness. So although liberation will certainly deepen our attraction to serving Krishna, one who is free from the bodily concept of life will certainly become attracted to serving Krishna. Just like it says, Atmaramas Chamunayo Ni Granta Yukrame Korvant Yahaitukim Bhaktim Itam Bhuta Gano Hari. That even Atmaramas, and especially Atmaramas, those who are free from all material concepts of life, although they're not attracted to anything spiritual, they also become attracted to the service of Krishna. Therefore, Krishna is known as Urukarama, who's above everyone. But still, Srila Rupa Goswami has cautioned us that the desires for bhakti, material enjoyment, and for mukti, liberation, they're like witches which haunt one's heart. That being haunted by such desires, such a person is impelled to do such different activities within the material world. So one has to give up these two witches which haunt heart. Of mukti and bhakti, or bhakti and mukti. And of the two, the desire for mukti is even worse than the desire for bhakti. Because if one is aspiring after mukti, one is trying to negate all variegatedness, and even the variegatedness, spiritual variegatedness. So often the impersonalists, they think that Krishna's form, his quality, his pastimes, they're also material. Although we've heard that Sankaracharya said Narayana Paro Vyakta, that Lord Narayan is above the material world. But in his commentary, Sankaracharya has explained to us that the concept that Narayan is above the material world is certainly true, but neither Narayan nor the material world is real anyhow. In other words, when Brahman, which is real, falls into illusion, the first illusion falls into is called Narayan. And then from that illusion comes another illusion, comes in the material world. So Narayan is an illusion, and the material world is an illusion. Although Narayan is above this illusion, it's a different, it's a higher form of illusion. And if you can't understand that, don't worry about it. You're not supposed to understand it. If you do understand it, then you're in the wrong place. So Narayan Pro Vyakta, we accept it that Narayan is certainly above the material world, and he's the source of everything, both material and spiritual. Therefore, Narayan's abode, Narayan's form, his qualities, pastimes, they're all spiritual, and there's no need to negate them. They're not material. So the conclusion is that the only qualification to practice devotional service is one's desire to do so. Even if one is attracted by, is not completely free from material sense gratification, or what one doesn't have that much knowledge, still if one is attracted to Krishna, one can begin the process of devotional service. And we've seen that there are four kinds of persons who approach Krishna who are neophytes. And to advance in Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti depends upon how mature is our knowledge and detachment, or knowledge and faith in the scriptures. And then to come to the platform of pure devotional service, free from its extraneous motives and uncovered by fruitive activities, etc., and with the intense desire to serve Krishna and to do something that's pleasing to Krishna, then that depends upon freedom from the bodily concept of life. And then Sri Rupa Goswami spends the rest of the chapter with different quotes about how negative, or how the desire for mukti is contrary to the desire to advance in pure devotional service. I'll read a couple of those quotes there. A similar passage appears in the third canto, 25th chapter, verse 34, wherein Kapila Dev instructs his mother and says, "My dear mother, devotees whose hearts are always filled in the service of my lotus feet and are prepared to do anything for my satisfaction, especially those fortunate devotees who assemble together to understand my qualities, pastimes, and form, and thus glorify me congregationally and derive transcendental pleasure therefrom, never desire to become one with me. And what to speak of becoming one with me, if they are offered a post like mine in my abode, or opulence like mine, or even personal association with me, with similar bodily features, they refuse to accept because they are satisfied simply by being engaged in my devotional service." Any questions about this? Yes.
I have two questions. First, you were saying that the advanced devotee, he knows different arguments, how to present different arguments to prove the position of pure devotional service. So you were mentioning Shankaracharya's philosophy, that Brahman falls into illusion, and then there's, that becomes Narayan. And Narayan falls into illusion, that's a higher illusion, and that's the material energy.
No, Narayan is illusion. Yes. Doesn't fall into illusion. He's a product of illusion, but he's a superior illusion, because he's able to create inferior illusions.
So how to defeat this argument, how to argue against this?
Defeat the argument that Narayan's an illusion?
Yeah.
Well, of course, their argument is not based upon anything logical, because there's no logic to what they're saying. How can you have Narayan illusion creating another illusion and not really exist? I mean, what does it mean to create something? How could something that did not exist create something? But they don't argue on the basis of logic and reasoning. It's on all on basis of Sanskrit and word jugglery and grammatical jugglery. Their main argument is they take the secondary meaning of the words in the Sanskrit language. Instead of taking the obvious meaning, they take something which is less than obvious. Otherwise, it has no meaning. So how to defeat it? Our acharyas, they defeat it mainly by just explaining that you have to take the primary understanding of the Sanskrit first. Not if it's the primary meaning is meaningful, the most obvious dictionary meaning is meaningful, then you take that. Not that there's something very direct and obvious, and you reject that and take something which is obscure that doesn't make any sense. It said that Krishna was walking in Vrindavan, so they say, well, Krishna means black, and therefore something obscure was moving in Vrindavan. Instead of taking the obvious meaning that Krishna is a person, he has flute, peacock feather, they say something indirect. Sometimes some indirect meaning may be there if you say, for instance, there's a house in the Ganges. When we hear there's a house in the Ganges, we can understand that there's a house on the bank of the Ganges, or such and such village is in the Ganges, or on the Ganges. So we can understand it's on the bank of the Ganges. But generally the primary or the direct meaning should be taken. I think it's called mukhya. The direct meaning is called mukhya. Mukhya. Rather than secondary meaning. Anything else?
Maharishi was saying that Bhajante Mam Dudavrittaha, that without pious activities, without sinful reactions free from delusion. So material desires, this sinful reaction that is being referred to in this shloka, is this the kuta? This sinful,
the whole sinful reactions is the whole chain. From sinful reactions we get parabdha karma, and then we get kutam, the inclination which manifests itself as bija, and then from bija comes papa, from papa comes up parabdha karma, comes, so it's the whole chain, all based upon avidya, ignorance. So as long as we're involved in the chain of sinful activities and sinful desires and sinful reactions, then so long we're covered by ignorance. And we take one body after another.
So in a practitioner of sadhana bhakti, if there are some material desires still present in that practitioner, can we understand that material desires present, that means sinful reactions are also present? So does that mean that devotional service is not present?
Devotional service may be present. Pure devotional service is different from devotional, just ordinary devotional service. Pure devotional service is service without any other desire except for the desire to please Krishna and to do something which is pleasing to Krishna, and is not covered by rituals or desire for liberation and free from all kinds of Anya bilasita shunyam, no other desire than to please Krishna.
So if some material desires pop up from time to time, that means some sinful reactions are still present in the practitioner, that means pure devotional service is not being practiced? Material desires sometimes arise in the mind?
We can perform. We're trying to come to the platform of performing pure devotional service. We're trying to go from the Kanista platform to the Madhyama Adha platform, and then we can arrive at the Uttama Adha Kari platform. So the second class devotee is performing devotional service. The Kanista Adha Kari, obviously it's not pure devotional service if we're doing it because we're in distress, or because we want some money, or because we're simply trying to satisfy some inquisitiveness. So the between pure devotional service and this ordinary devotional service is a wise person who's cultivating knowledge. And what is that knowledge? That Krishna is the object of love, and how to make friendship with the devotees, how to engage in the loving exchanges with the devotees, how to elevate the innocent to perform, to execute Krishna's mission in this world, and how to avoid those who are antagonistic towards Krishna. Well, the neophyte, different ways, he may like, you know, the old rock music, his old rock stars, and he likes to listen to it once in a while. It's, you know, Krishna's, sometimes he goes to Krishna and complains because Krishna is just, his life isn't going so well and can't understand, he's a devotee, why isn't Krishna reciprocating with him? And sometimes he fights with the devotees, or a lot of times he fights with the devotees, he's envious sometimes, doesn't like, he likes this devotee because he gave him a sweet yesterday, but this devotee criticized him and he's going to hell anyhow, so who could like him? So he fights with the devotees, and sometimes he has friends and sometimes enemies. And he's not so much enthusiastic to preach the innocent. He doesn't want to go out of his way. Too much of endeavor. Therefore, the Kanista Adha Kari, he doesn't really have that much scriptural knowledge. Doesn't really have a real taste reading the scriptures, you know, comes to class sometimes, but not so much enthusiastic about it. When the devotees criticize the non-devotees, they become very disturbed, you know, sounds like they're talking about me, and how dare they criticize me in class. So this is Kanista Adha Kari. So he has to come to the platform of Madhyam in order to actually begin to practice pure devotional service. In other words, to actually performing our activities just to please Krishna. And faith that the Krishna is the goal, not some temporary achievement. So even when it's covered with a desire for profit, adoration, distinction, that's still within the Kanista Adha Kari. As long as we have material desire, lust, then there has to be anger. As long as there's lust, there will be greed and anger. As long as there's greed, anger, and lust, there will be delusion. And our memory will become impure, and our intelligence will be impure. And then we can't be Krishna conscious. Paravastava devota jato yavana jignasita atmatatvam yavana kriyastava didamanovai Karmatmaka yena sharira bandaha evamana karma visham yukpriyukde avidyatman yukpriyamane pritirna yavan maivasa deve namochiye deham yogena yadvat. So as long as one doesn't inquire about the nature of the Absolute Truth, one is said to be defeated by the illusory energy. And as long as one is defeated by ignorance, then the mind will become impure. And as long as the mind is impure, then one's consciousness will be unclear. And as long as the consciousness is unclear, one will have to take another body. Therefore, as long as one doesn't develop, as long as one engages in fruitive activities, and as long as one doesn't develop a love for Vasudeva, for Krishna, that long he'll have to take one body after another. There won't be any liberation. Yes?
Maharaj, you said that profit, adoration, and distinction are present. That means one is on the Kanishta platform.
Yeah.
So I had heard that in Harinam Chintamani by Bhaktivinoda Thakur that even up to higher stages of devotional service like bhava, that some trace of this desire will remain. So is this correct? And if so, is it possible that even someone in the stage of bhava could be considered a kanishta adhikari?
No, it's ridiculous. It has nothing to do with it. I know there is one on the stage of bhava, as it says in the Madhuri Kandamini, material life is just like a shadow. It hardly doesn't even exist. Material life doesn't really affect them. There may be some insignificant traits, but 99.99%, you can go all over the nines all the way down. One is engaged in pure devotional service. Only at the state of prema is absolute eradication of all material desires, completely absolute. But at the state of bhava, it certainly is complete.
99.999%.
Yeah, there may be some traits, but just like a shadow. It doesn't even it appears, it doesn't really affect the devotee. Even at the state of asakti, eradication of material desires is practically almost complete.
So
all pervasive.
At this point we can consider that, because it's mostly 99.999% gone, it's beyond kanishta platform. We can't have a hard and fast rule that someone having some desires kanishta.
It's where you mainly at. I mean, uttama adhikari is uttama. But one who's at the stage of bhava is at the stage of uttama adhikari. That's the beginning of uttama adhikari. From uttama goes from bhava all the way up to mahabhava. And madhyama goes from nishta all the way up to asakti. And anything below that is considered to be kanista. One is at the state of anartha vritti, trying to free oneself from these desires. At the state of nishta, although material desires may be present, but when one is engaged in bhajan, one is not affected by them. They may be present, but they don't impede one's devotional service.
How do they manifest if they don't impede the devotional service?
They don't usually manifest. Because they don't impede one's devotional service, therefore they generally go away quite rapidly. They manifest in the fact that the devotee is not completely aware of Krishna. One is free, completely free from the material concept of life. Then one has, one's senses are, or we can put it this way, they don't impede the devotee's service, but because his senses are not pure, therefore he doesn't get a full taste of devotional service like you do at Ruchi or Asakti or Bhava. Therefore the devotional service goes on, but the depth is not so deep. But as we become purified more and more by the practice of service, then the depth becomes deeper and deeper. So one develops spiritually, at the same time the impediments are less, and the depth becomes more and more intense. So Takshi Krishna Namadi, Nabraved Grayam Indriya. As long as the senses are impure, then one can actually relish pure devotional service. But at the stage of Anishta, when it's performing devotional service, there's no impediment, and then as it becomes purified, then it turns into Ruchi. As more and more of the impurities are destroyed by pure devotional service, then one comes to the state of Ruchi and becomes more relishable. Then one comes to the state of Asakti and it intensifies even more. The state of Bhava, then it says that then one comes to the state of the qualifications of Bhava, or it derives into the concept of liberation. And it's rarely achieved. So it derives the concept of liberation is because the happiness is so great. But then when one comes to the state of prema, then it becomes very intense. Sandarananda Visheshatma. then if it's multiplied millions of times, bhava, then that's the intensity of the pleasure one gets at the stage of prema. For bhava, there's no material life, but one still has to develop a spiritual life. There's a difference between becoming free from material life and actually developing your spiritual life. As long as one is affected materially, then it's difficult to develop spiritually, because one is absorbed in material life, so therefore there's no development. But as the material life slackens, then one can proportionally develop a spiritual life. There's less and less impediment. And there's more and more perception of what spiritual life is like. So at the stage of asakti, practically there is no material life anymore, because the mind is always in Krishna consciousness. But then just it's a question of developing more and more of the spiritual side, intensifying the spiritual side of life. So from the stage of asakti, then it's just a question of developing spiritually. Below that, or even at the stage of ruchi, it's practically automatic and spontaneous. But before, and even at nishtha, because although material life is still present, but it doesn't impede one's service, therefore it's just a question of developing it. And that development of spiritual life in relation with Krishna, Krishna says, Tesham eva nukam bhartam, aham ajnana jam tamaha, nasham yam yatma bhavishto, jnana dipena bhashvata. So Krishna does two things simultaneously. He enlightens one more and more with transcendental knowledge, and at the same time he purifies one. So as soon as one comes to the stage of spontaneous devotional service or undeviating devotional service, then the purification becomes much more rapid, and the enlightenment becomes more and more rapid too. The slow part of the whole stage is the kanishtha part. That's what takes the most time, because we have to give up our material attachments. Before we can do that, we even have to find out that we actually have material attachments. So the kanishtha, Kanishadakari devotee usually doesn't recognize he has any attachments. He thinks he's the most pure. So everyone else is having a hard time. Therefore, it's a slow process. And even some attachment, someone realizes they have an attachment, they don't want to give it up. They didn't come to devotional service to give up their material attachments. So Krishna has to convince the devotee to give up one attachment after another, generally. First he has to recognize he has a material attachment, and then be willing to give it up. So that takes some time. Therefore it's a gradual process. Nor should we think, well, I'm a neophyte, everyone kicks me around. No one appreciates me as a neophyte, so let me act as if I was an advanced devotee, then everyone will appreciate me. Unfortunately, if one tries to act as an advanced devotee, people may appreciate the devotee for some time. That means that generally, if someone acts as an advanced devotee to people who don't understand what an advanced devotee really means. For a neophyte, anyone who's a little bit more better as a neophyte than they are, they're an advanced devotee. Any a little higher neophyte, then they're, you know, a very advanced devotee. But then if one is a little higher and then one tries to imitate the most advanced devotees or an actual advanced devotee, then the result is that one won't make any progress whatsoever. And not making any progress, one will gradually degrade. If we don't make progress, we generally go the other way. So acting as an advanced devotee when one is actually not an advanced devotee is not very good. Because then one will think there's no need to become purified to actually engage in the proper devotional service. One will spend all one's time accepting worship and honor and service instead of performing service. One will think, well, I'm a great devotee. Everyone says I'm a great devotee. And so to help everyone else, I'll just accept all kinds of service and honor and worship. And that way they'll all advance because I'm an advanced devotee. I don't have to do any service anymore. I don't have to work with anyone. I don't have to do service. I can just accept him that way. That's my service. So such a person, because he's not such a devotee, because they're not performing service, they're not worshiping the Krishna and the devotees, therefore they gradually fall down. Their service attitude becomes slack. Therefore it's better to always consider oneself to be a neophyte. Otherwise one will have some difficulty. So the most advanced devotee is always the humblest devotee, most dependent on Krishna. And the devotee who's not so advanced doesn't depend so much upon Krishna. Yes?
Can a Kanishtha Adhikar devotee perform pure devotional service by the spiritual master's mercy?
Can he perform pure? Of course, anyone can perform pure devotional service. It's not like, you know, I'm a neophyte and I'm about to do something devotional and the Vishnu Dutas come and say, stop, sorry, you can't do anything devotional. Just you're just a Kanishtha. You're not supposed to do any devotional things. Of course, then they won't be, you know, then they'll become purified. Otherwise, how do we become purified? It's not like a mechanical process. You know, Kanishtha acts like Kanishtha perpetually. And then mechanically, you know, oh, he's been 15 years a Kanishtha. Give him a little pure, elevate the guy a little. No, that's the only way we make any advancement whatsoever. We have to practice pure devotional service. Then we come to the Madhyama. We become situated in the Madhyama state. So it's by seeing devotees who are actually more advanced than we are and following their footsteps, then we become purified and advanced. So we have to. But we shouldn't imitate. We shouldn't. We should see the next level from us. Or even we see the Uttama, when he comes to preach, he has to act as a Madhyam. Otherwise he can't preach. So how does a very advanced devotee, has an Uttama when he comes to the position of Madhyam to preach, how does he act? He follows all the rules and regulations. He comes to all the programs. He chants all his rounds. He's always trying to spread Krishna consciousness. So he acts like a perfect Madhyam. So if we're trying to become a Madhyam, the middle class, with discrimination and engage in service, then the Uttama is the best one to follow, because they act as a perfect Madhyam. They show us an example. So if we follow that example, then we can engage in pure devotional service even in the Kanishtha Adhikari platform. It's how the Kanishtha elevates himself, comes to the program. Not that I'm a Kanishtha, I don't have to go to the programs anymore. I'm just a materialistic devotee. Why should I go to this program? All they'll do is criticize me. Who, you know, and I'll get depressed. No, I'm a Kanishtha, I should go to the programs. Alright, I'm a Kanishtha, I should chant my rounds. That way I'll elevate myself. I'm a Kanishtha, I should try and preach. Spread Krishna consciousness, then I'll become a Madhyam. Yes?
Maharaj, could you please describe the symptoms, qualities of the person at the stage of Nishtha? Because this seems to be very important, the transition from Kanishtha to Madhyam.
Oh, don't think like that. It's not exactly like, you know, Brahma comes with a sacred thread and says, oh, congratulations, you graduated, you're not a Kanishtha anymore. You're a Madhyam. Everyone goes, Jai Prabhu, he's a Madhyam. Madhyam's ki jai. Everything's a gradual process. It's not like we can act on in the Nishtha platform. We just have to pay attention when we're chanting Hare Krishna. It's not like, you know, I paid attention, the flowers from the ceiling are coming down. You hear some, you know, some horns blowing from the sky. Madhyam, Kita. Bhishma, Bhishma. I just have to pay attention when we chant Hare Krishna. Or when we're thinking about Krishna, we should just concentrate. Or when we're hearing, we should concentrate. That's all it takes. It's not like some mysterious transformation, you know. Wow, you look like a devotee. Look at that person. He's just transforming right before us. The halo is, you know, look at that halo is starting to manifest. He's getting brighter, brighter. It's a madhyam. He's made it. No, it's not like that. It's a gradual, everything's a gradual transformation. Anything else? Yes, sorry.
I was asked, very often I've heard that we have to purify the mind and to make the mind surrender. My question is, who actually has to surrender, the soul or the mind?
Because the soul and the mind. No, this the mind. The soul is not under the jurisdiction of the mind. It doesn't really matter where the mind is. The example is used: apurimanam achala pratishtam samudram apa pravishanti advā tadva kamayam pravishanti sarve sashantim apnoti nakama kami. Just like during the rainy season, the rivers fill up and they start flowing towards the ocean. But no matter how much water there is in the river, when it enters into the ocean, it doesn't disturb the ocean. So similarly, a devotee, when they develop consciousness of Krishna, the more one becomes conscious of Krishna, even though material desires may be present, they don't disturb such a devotee. Because instead of becoming influenced by the material desires, one is influenced by Krishna. So the soul is called tatashta. It can either be influenced by material desires or influenced by Krishna's desires, by Krishna consciousness. In other words, in order to become conscious of Krishna, we have to find out what Krishna wants and do that. And then we become, Krishna reveals himself because of our service. And if we want to become unconscious of Krishna, then we just have to find out, become conscious, we're trying to find out what Krishna wants, and then do that. And automatically, it doesn't matter what the mind is saying. We just ignore it. Yeah, we are the soul. What's talking to you right now is not the mind. It's the soul. And what's hearing is not the mind, it's the soul. So the mind may say, wait a second, don't believe him. He's trying to trick you. Next he'll tell you not to eat. No, that's the mind. The mind is that little voice going, beep beep, don't surrender, don't listen to Krishna. You know, you'll be unhappy, you won't be able to enjoy. So that's the mind, but it's the soul that has to make the decision. So if the soul has intelligence, and it goes, wait a second, I'm not going to listen to the mind, I'm going to listen to Krishna, or Krishna's representatives. And then when the soul becomes determined to do that, you know, the mind's going, beep, beep, smoke a cigarette. And the devotee's going, wait, don't do it, you know, it's not very nice, it's not going to help your devotional service. The mind says, oh, forget it, you know, what is it, one cigarette going to do? So then you hear beep 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 beep. You know, don't listen to the fanatic devotee. But then if you just give it up, the mind, and you just listen with our intelligence, we have the intelligence. Then the mind just goes away after a while. We don't have to make the mind do anything. We have to surrender, not the mind. The mind's not going back to Godhead. We are. Hey, my mind is going back to Godhead. It's leaving me here. I wish I would have done as much service as my mind did. We have to engage the mind in Krishna service with our intelligence. We, the soul, have to be willing to accept the intelligence coming from higher authorities. That's what we can accept. And then the mind will engage in Krishna service and we'll get the benefit of thinking about Krishna instead of mind, of associating with Krishna. If the mind is thinking about Krishna in devotion, then we get Krishna's association. So we're trying to choose with our intelligence that the mind should think about Krishna rather than Maya. And then we get Krishna's association that way. Is that clear? Yes.
Maharaji said at the beginning of class that this devotional service is based upon attraction for Krishna. And this attraction is achieved by the mercy of pure devotees. So I'm wondering how this process works. How does this work? These pure devotees, they consciously pray for you, or they mercifully
They take a little wand and they go, mercy, mercy. And then they touch you on the head and go, mercy. Now, how does it work? It works. They give you. We hear from them. Krishna says, "Mat shita mat kata prana, bodhi antash parash param, kataya antash chamam nityam, tushanti charamanti cham." They sit around. They talk about Krishna, and then we find out what the process of devotional service is, and we see their example, what they're talking about, and then we follow it, and that's how we get the mercy. I mean, they may pray for us. But that's part of the process. To believe that there is a God. And he does answer, you know, our desires. So they may pray for us. But practically speaking, they explain to us the process of devotional service and by their preaching, by their example, and if we follow them, then we make progress. By becoming constantly engaged in devotional service with enthusiasm.
What is this we hear about the merciful glance?
Merciful glance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu means he bothered to come down here to teach us the process of devotional service. Otherwise, he just would have walked around glancing at everyone. Now, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he may be powerful enough that he glances at someone and awakens their pure love of God, because he's God himself. I mean, he is God. That's the whole process, to become conscious of God. So God's there, there's no problem. But we can understand the people he glanced at were ordinary persons. Not that he, otherwise he just walk around. Why, if God is so merciful, he glances at someone, they go back to Godhead, just like the salia trees he embraced, they went back to Godhead. Then why is he kind to some people and neglects everyone else? And God wouldn't be very merciful. Some people he sends to hell, and other people walks around in braces and sends them back to Godhead. So we can understand that when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or anyone else, they show their mercy like that, there must have been some special qualification, the person they're showing the mercy to. And even if it is causeless, but these living entities somehow or another accepted the mercy. Well, certainly Krishna glanced over Kamsa, but he didn't exactly accept the mercy either. Although Krishna gave him special mercy. Just like the washerman. So it must have taken him millions of lifetimes to get the opportunity of some kind of service, pious activities, to be able to meet Krishna right in Mathura directly. But then when he got the opportunity to go back to the spiritual world, when Krishna just asked him for a little bit of cloth, he started to give Krishna a lecture. So instead, Krishna cut off his head with his hand, and he got liberation, mukti. So he must have done a lot of certain, you know, pious activities to get this opportunity to meet Krishna right in the street. But then he spoiled it all because he rejected Krishna's mercy. Yes.
Maharaj, can you give a few more examples of the Lord's interaction with devotees and their either accepting or rejecting the mercy and understanding behind this?
You mean where Krishna met someone, asked them to do something, they didn't do it?
Krishna or Lord Chaitanya.
Oh, we have the example of Krishna Das. He got captured. He was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's personal associate. He got captured by the Bhadaharis. So even when it's a personal associate with Krishna, one can misuse his independence. And the Buddhists, Caitanya Mahaprabhu is preaching to them, and instead of appreciating them, they try to give him some plate with all kinds of impure things. Not everyone appreciated Caitanya Mahaprabhu. Preached to all kinds of people. Didn't always at once accept it. Even Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya didn't appreciate Caitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings all the time.
But he got the mercy in the end.
At the end. And finally he realized that he was foolish. Or we have the case from Kashmiri. He was defeated by Caitanya Mahaprabhu, but he wasn't very happy about it. But then because his worshipful deity Saraswati came in the dream, therefore he realized that Caitanya Mahaprabhu was actually God and went and surrendered to him.
What's the difference between devotees like Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and Keshava Kashmiri, who in the end managed to surrender to the Lord? And I don't know, Buddhists, they would...
Well, they even surrendered at the end.
They also surrendered.
Yeah, Caitanya Mahaprabhu, generally everyone surrendered to him. Except for some of the students. We didn't find out what happened to the student who was threatening, who said he would threaten Caitanya Mahaprabhu with a stick. He ever dared to do that again. We don't know what happened to those students.
What did he do as a result?
He took sannyas. When he was chanting Gopi Gopi, and the students started, you know, said, "Why are you wasting your time chanting the gopis? Why don't you do something pious? Chant the name of Krishna, because that way you'll get a good reaction. You get some piety." But Caitanya Mahaprabhu became very angry and chased after the student with a stick. So then the student went to the other students and began to criticize Caitanya Mahaprabhu, saying that, you know, he's a so-called teacher, but he doesn't take good advice. So they said if he dares to do it again to a Brahmin, we'll beat him. But Caitanya Mahaprabhu realized that they were accepting him as just like an ordinary person, and therefore they were committing offenses, and therefore he took sannyasa, they'd offer him some respect. So Caitanya Mahaprabhu is an example of someone who took sannyasa just to get some respect. Of course, people should respect God. I mean. Yes.
Is it possible for ordinary people to reach such a high state of growth and life with Krishna?
Yeah. What's that?
She's asking if everyone can attain this stage of high devotional
level. That's what you're supposed to do. That's why we're here. Of course. There's plenty of room in the spiritual world. It's not like, you know, sorry, no vacancy. It's expected a few more souls will fall down and there'll be room and you can come, you know, you can make some progress. No, there's plenty of room in the spiritual world. There's unlimited living entities there. There's a few souls down there. We're not expected to stay here forever. It's not like some, you know, rare, unusual soul, you know. No, everyone's supposed to go back to Godhead. Krishna says, Vidaraga Vayakroda Manmaya Mamupashita Bahava Jnana Tapasa Putavadvava Agata. Many, many persons in the past became purified by knowledge of me, and thus they obtained transcendental love from me. So especially when it's already taken to the past, it's expected that they go back to Godhead.
And they have a level of devotion?
Yeah, anyone who comes to, well, level of devotion, anyone who takes the process of devotional service and accepts it completely becomes absolutely devoted to Krishna. It's not like you know, Radharani is walking down the block in Goloka, and she sees some flowers. You know, and she goes, you know, bow down. Some, you know, coward boy walks by and asks her a question, says, sorry, you're not on my level of devotion. I don't ask what. No, the level of devotion is exactly the opposite of material conception. The more humble one becomes, the more one becomes elevated devotionally. The highest devotees are the ones who appreciate everyone more than they can appreciate themselves. It's a question of developing appreciation. So there's no limit to the amount of appreciation you can develop. It's not like, you know, sorry, you've reached your level of, you know, the absolute level you can come to of appreciation, it's all done, you know. No, it's unlimited. Still, there's some, you know, objective way of discriminating between the different rasas, but they're all unlimited. There's unlimited appreciation in all of them. Approaching capacity, can't go more. No, it's all a material conception of life. That's all in the material world. It has nothing to do with... Krishna is unlimitedly beautiful. He's unlimitedly attractive. You know, and our attraction for him is unlimited. And the more we become attracted to him, the more beautiful he becomes. It's not like it's stagnant. Krishna has reached his beauty and everyone else, and his attractiveness, and everyone else is kind of stuck along with Krishna. There's no. As Krishna, as the devotee, as Krishna becomes more beautiful and attractive, then everyone becomes more attracted to them, to him, and they become more attractive. So the whole spiritual world is all advancing together. There's no material competition there. You know, some poor soul is being left behind, everyone's making so much advance, and you know the soul is further and further away. Now the whole spiritual world advances simultaneously, together. Yes.
Maharaj, this is true. The 3/4 of the living entities are already in the liberated in the spiritual world, and 1/4 are here in the material world.
Yeah. I mean, I really haven't counted everyone, but we can take it, you know, we can accept the estimate, something like that. I mean, this is just to give us an idea how most of the living entities are not here. They're in the spiritual world. Now that we should think that, you know, everyone's here and there's a few liberated souls. No, practically everyone is liberated except for a few conditioned souls. Although the conditioned souls are asankhya, they're uncountable, but there are only a very small percentage of the total number of souls that are liberated. Anything else? Last question, yes.
As you were mentioning the importance of being humble, and how if we appreciate others more than oneself, this is a very important thing to develop. The question is how to develop the art of appreciating the devotees.
The art of focusing one's attention and giving one's love to Krishna. So if we focus our attention on Krishna and his service, then gradually we'll develop appreciation for everyone else. And if we see that Krishna is in everyone's heart, it's not just Krishna in the altar, it's also Krishna in everyone's heart. So we see the devotees as representatives of Krishna and cooperate with them and serve them, then gradually we'll be able to develop an interest in serving Krishna, and we'll learn how to serve Krishna as the innocent. Krishna as the, in the heart of the innocent. Be able to be instrumental to them so they can understand what Krishna wants them to do. And then we can learn how to avoid those who are antagonistic Krishna, so we won't make them any more antagonistic. So we can come to the Madhyama Adhikari platform, that way develop our service to Krishna and be able to serve all other living entities too. Okay, thank you very much. Grantharaj, Nectar of Devotion, Ki Jai.
Jai. Prabhupada, Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande.